Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
Hi there and welcome. So listen, new format. You like it? I hope you do. And that beautiful voice is Elaine Leaf. Thank you, Elaine, for giving a new voice to our radio program, and excited to have you with us. So let me get right to the market and what's happening. Let's talk about Friday, May 2nd. Already, huh? How about this year flying by? So let's take a quick look at the broad market, and I'll give you some year-to-date numbers, and then we'll get into some details. First, let me just call it a relatively quiet day. Dow off just a little bit. Same with the NASDAQ and the S&P. Dow closed at 16,513, off about 0.25%. S&P 500 closing at 1881, off about 0.125%. And the NASDAQ closing at 4124, off about 0.1%. So I would call that a flat day. Even if you read in the paper that it is a market stock sink to close the week, you know, those kind of superlative attention grabbing headlines are often an exaggeration. So that's the real deal. What else can I tell you about? Crude oil, just below $100 a barrel at $99.75 per barrel. Gold holding at just under $1,300 an ounce, $1,298.60. And let's see, the euro still at that $1.38 like we've been talking about for some time. And 10-year bonds holding at 2.6, almost like it's a fixed yield, but it is 2.6%. If you buy a 10-year treasury and hold it for the duration, that would be your yield to maturity of 2.6%. And silver right in there with gold, but up a little more at $19.50. So that's kind of the broad market activity. A few things in the news and some up-to-date or year-to-date numbers. Up-to-date year-to-date numbers, we'll call it that. The Dow basically flat year-to-date. So we've got, 4 months in our pocket, and we got nothing to show for it for the Dow, but the Dow is flat. NASDAQ off about 1.5% year to date. S&P 500 up. That's right, I said up. S&P 500 index up about 1.7%. And the small and mid caps moving in different directions. Interesting. Mid cap is also up about a point. So again, nothing to write home about, but up about 1%. But small caps, interesting, off about 2% year to date. And the only explanation I can give you for that is at this point, I think that part of that is that they did so well in 2013 that there's a little bit of a pullback there. Same is true for some of my notable commentary or comments about the international markets. You have Japan off 11% year to date. Who are the other standout negatives? China. Yeah, there we go again. China off about 4%, roughly. Any other big standout negatives? Mexico still struggling at about negative 5%. And then, of course, we got some of our big standouts on the plus side. The one I keep referring to is Italy, up in that 14 to 15% year-to-date range, doing well. And so those are some of the goings-on, if you will. Yeah, that's good. That's enough on the international. Let me jump over here. I've got some other news items for you that I want to get to. Let's see. The White House, Wall Street Journal reporting in its What's New section, White House reporting that, you know, the whole healthcare program with the sign up on the exchanges, the White House released a report that 28% of people who signed up for the health plans were in the 18 to 34 range, which is falling significantly short of what they consider to be ideal. Now, I don't know what that really means, but the more sick people or older people and less of the young, healthier ones, the more there will be difficulty in this program being sustainable. And on a very related note, this is where you have a potential of a cascade effect, and that is that premiums may jump up significantly for those in the plans if enough healthy and or younger people don't get into the plan to help collect premium and offset the cost of the people that are going to use it more. And if that happens, then when premiums start to rise, guess what happens? People that say, you know, I could get something somewhere else cheaper, or maybe I'm not really, I'm pretty healthy, I don't need this, I'll take my chances, They come out, premiums go up for who's left, and it's a cascade. Then it just goes into a nosedive. That's what's going on with the healthcare latest. Other news that I thought was interesting to mention, Merkel was expected to tell Obama that Germany opposes more sanctions on Russia. Interesting. That's a message from the German business community, I think. And Putin, in a related discussion, he called on Ukraine to withdraw its forces from the southeast of the country, which would effectively cede control to pro-Russian militants. So we're sitting on your border with, I don't know, maybe 10 or more thousand Russian military troops. And we'd like you to take your troops and set them on a water break to the other side of the country. That's okay, right? Boy. And other political news, the Senate is likely to vote soon on a bill designed to force the approval of the contentious Keystone Pipeline and bypass the administration. And that was a report, top Democrats reporting that. So interesting layout there. Okay, so let's, with our new format, let's jump to our show open and we'll have a good show lineup for you. Stay right there.
Real Money Radio is brought to you today by Holland Financial. Since 1997, David Holland and his team have helped hundreds of investors plan their financial futures. Planning doesn't have to be hard, complicated, or stressful. Come see how simple and clear your future can be when you plan stronger. The consultation is free. Call 671-PLAN or visit us online at planstronger.com.
And welcome back. All right, so let's dig in a little bit. I ran across several things I wanted to share with you myself. And so it's a David show. I hope you like the David shows. I try to mix it up, David show and David with guest shows. So at least that's the feedback I've got. So we'll go with that. So here's some interesting stuff. Here's one. You know, I monitor and read a lot about what's going on in the financial world and different thoughts out there about what people expect. And I ran across a really interesting story that was reported in Financial Advisor Magazine. There was a conference, a financial advisor retirement symposium that was held in Las Vegas not long ago. And they had, you know, they bring in a heavyweight experts in the industry to talk about where they think things are going. And it was very interesting at this conference that they had some of these experts that were really diametrically opposed or had completely different opinions about the future where opportunities are. So I want to share some of this with you. And the reason I want to share it is it is a great example of why you want to have a balanced, diversified portfolio. And if you know, and also maybe, you know, that second opinion you've been thinking about whether you need to get or not. Well, here's a great example why. So we've got two big heavy hitters. One of them, Margie Patel, is a senior portfolio manager for Wells Capital Management Fundamental Equity Group. Okay, I'm not familiar with them, but she was brought in as an expert. And then on, so she believes strongly, and I'll give you some comments and summary of what she said at this conference, but she believes that the commodities market boom is over, the emerging market story is played out, and that the U.S. will be the best market to invest in for the foreseeable future. That's in the red corner. And then in the blue corner, her diametrically opposed expert, Mark Yusko, CEO and Chief Investment Officer at Morgan Creek Capital Management, which I've not also heard of him either. He holds that certain commodities like oil and agriculture will continue to be a bonanza and that emerging markets are where the action will be and that the U.S. will be a hard place to make money going forward. So you got these two that are they're both experts. They're well-regarded or they wouldn't be invited to speak at this conference. And they've got completely different positions. So I'll go through some of the things that they said because I found this just fascinating. So Patel, she's the one that believes in the U.S. She said that the commodity market, as I talked about earlier, is done. And that spells trouble for the emerging markets. And emerging markets had a strong decade of growth. But a lot of that was caused by a boom of commodity prices in some of these emerging markets tied to China's growth. And so she said that China's decelerating. So instead of accelerating, decelerating economy has basically drained the fuel from the commodities engine. That makes sense to me. So she said, we look back and that was really more the fundamental change in emerging markets was really about commodities being tied to China becoming more industrialized. Okay. So she said, that's why she thinks we'll see commodities prices decline and that inflation won't be an issue for many years. And that could be a boon to U.S. companies and consumers, and a strong U.S. corporate sector also is a reason why she believes that the U.S. economy can be strong. She thinks that the growth in equity will be good, profits and margins will be maintained, and there will be ongoing cost-cutting and innovation, so on and so forth. Also, another reason is that there is the shale oil and gas boom, which I do agree with as well. There's a fundamental long-term boost to the U.S. economy. Also, you know, having lower cost energy more readily available makes it cheaper for companies. And we've been seeing a trend a little bit with the manufacturing starting to uptick in the United States. We've seen a trend of the cost going down for businesses and lowering the cost for consumers. So that's wonderful. Now, that's kind of that side of it, if you will. Now, on the other side, flip over. USCO, who was the one that believed the U.S. is not the place to be, and look, we need to look more overseas and emerging markets and such, he said that the U.S. is in a secular decline as a greater number of baby boomers retire. True. I'm not sure if that creates a secular decline, but true about the baby boomers retiring. Entitlement programs are growing. True. And that the U.S. debt increase and debt has to increase to pay for those entitlements. True. So, he says, we can't pay for those benefits, so our debt to GDP will go up, and more debt means lower economic growth, and there's no way out except through maybe war. So that was his comment. So if I hear that, I go, you know, that makes sense as well. And so you've got kind of a, and even for me listening to both sides, and I read all of their comments, my point to you is that as you listen to this, you know, there are good logical arguments about what may happen in the future. And so as I listen to that, what that tells me when I build portfolios for my clients and build strategies, it's going to be a mixed bag. I'm going to bring in different things. I'm going to have stocks. I'm going to have mutual funds. I'm going to have different elements of that portfolio. I'm going to devise a plan for income using whatever may be appropriate to do that. So I'm going to build that. I'm not going to bet on one thing. And my crystal ball, I've got three of them, and they're all broken. So I don't know which one of these experts is going to be right. What I think is they'll probably both be right, and we just don't know the net effect. You know, you've got two pieces to this. In fact, it's multi-sided, multifaceted. We don't know what that's going to portend for the country. But I think there's a lot of positive potentials for the U.S., but there's also some of these concerns, and we'll be having other conversations on this program about debt and the potential impact, but I will have more to share with you on this in the future. So let's do this. Let's grab a break, come back. I want to talk a little bit about Social Security. I want to talk about muni bonds and bonds in general. So stay right there.
Retirement planning doesn't have to be hard, complicated, or stressful. It also doesn't have to be in a hurry or with sales pressure. Since starting Holland Financial in 1997, it has been David Holland's mission to help individuals and couples plan their futures with personalized financial planning. David puts himself in his clients' shoes and recommends products and services he would choose for himself or his family. To learn more about Holland Financial or to schedule a one-on-one consultation with David, call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
And welcome back. One more shout out to Elaine Leaf. Good job, Elaine. That sounds so good. You're the best. All right. So what might not be the best, nice segue there, David, is bonds going forward. I know you've heard a lot about bonds lately. I've talked about them on this program, but I want to break it down a little bit further and talk about specific types of bonds, the muni bond, municipal bonds. And I want to talk about that because there has been, well, let me back up. More so, I want to talk about individual bonds. Muni bonds often are done as individual bonds. So I really want to limit my talk specifically about individual bonds, but it could be muni bonds, it could be corporate bonds. I want to talk about individual bonds, but a little bit more about muni bonds in that context. So there are some risks that we need to be aware of and be very careful of when it comes to investing in these types of individual bonds. Because right now, you know, we had the search for the plane that went down, and we've got the whole world searching. Well, there's as much searching going on now for yield all over this world as there is for that plane. Everybody's searching for yield. How do we get yield? How do I get return on my money and a return of my money? See, the return on your money doesn't count unless you get a return of your money back, right? What's 12% return when you don't get your principal back? I can answer that. That's not a hypothetical rhetorical question. If you earn 12 and you lose your principal, you lost 88%. That's your return. It's a negative 88. So how do we do that? There's lots of different ways, but one of the ways people have been looking to bonds and even individual bonds. Okay. So I let me get the obvious out of the way, which has been the main concern about bonds of late, is interest rate risk. We've talked about it. You've heard about it. Interest rates go up, bonds go down. There you've got it. Well, the way it works is if interest rates go up, new bonds being issued, they get a higher rate. Existing bonds are lower for the same type of bond. The market adjusts the price of the old bond so that its return to an investor who would buy it is the same as a new bond. And the only way to make that happen is simple math. The price of the bond you're holding has to go down in value. So you lose principal value. That's it. It's a great equalizer. And so it's not something that you have control over. So we have to be careful with bonds and watch the interest rates. And now, with an individual bond, you can't hold it maturity and you'll get the face value of your bond. No problem. But with bond funds and the like, you've got to be careful because you may not be in control of that. Or if you need to sell your bond early, you may experience a loss if interest rates have jumped up a lot. Okay, like we get that one out of the way. Here are some of the other ones that we need to be cautious of and be careful of. And one of them is actually, and this again is a little bit more with the bonds that you see more with municipal bonds, and it's liquidity risk. And what we're really getting at is the cost to get out. And this is very interesting. I ran across this in Financial Advisor magazine. A gentleman named Rob Brown had written a report, and this is really interesting. There was a presentation made by a Vanguard portfolio manager, Christopher Ryan, now at Thornburg. These are gentlemen that are at mutual funds. Anyway, he had made a presentation, U.S. Senate Committee on Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs. Get this. He said that the typical bond, not a bad one, but just a typical bond, we're talking about municipal bonds here, has a bid-to-ask spread of 213 basis points. Now, I just started talking in another language. I didn't realize that. But basically, what that means is if you want to sell your bond, it's a municipal bond, that you're going to cost you 2.13 or just over 2% to get out of it. Now, if in today's interest rate, let's say that you are your bond is paying 1.5% or 2%. It's going to cost you some 2% or more to get out of it. I mean, that, you know, and that's just, so you've got a liquidity risk there. All right. Now, some of the other risks, bankruptcy risk. What if one, so let's say, let me back up. What if, I'm hyper to get to this for you. Let's say we've got a portfolio. Somebody's built a fixed income portfolio and they've got $250,000 and they spread it out thinking that they're diversifying over 10 municipal bonds and they buy $25,000 in each of the municipal bonds. So we've got 10 bonds, okay? And let's say that one of them goes bad. There's bankruptcy in a municipality. We've seen this, right? This has happened. That affects 10% of the portfolio. So in a properly diversified portfolio, you've got 10 bonds. Now, is that properly diversified? That's the question. I would say no. But you potentially lose a significant part of 10% of your portfolio. Maybe you lose 5 to 10% of your total portfolio. That's significant. Again, chasing yield, right? We're after the yield. We're trying to get return on our money. We got to get a return of our money if we're going to get a return on our money. Bankruptcy risk is a real risk with individual bonds. The problem is to get enough of them, you have to have a really big portfolio. Next is default risk. Maybe they don't go bankrupt, but maybe they start skipping payments. That's a problem for the portfolio. Downgrade risk. Ready for this? What if the municipality, and again, I'm speaking to municipal bonds as an individual bond, but we could see this with corporate bonds as well. What if your individual municipal bond or corporate bond is downgraded? What does that mean? That means the rating agency downgrades it. What's going to happen to that bond? I can tell you exactly what's going to happen. The price of that bond is going to fall in value because other investors who might buy that bond from you, even if you never sell it to them, the price of your bond goes down because they're going to expect a, they're going to want a demand a higher return on your bond because of the perceived risk. Now, another risk that has a lot of names for it, you can call it individual business risk or idiosyncratic risk. That's the big word. But basically, the risk associated with an individual issuer of bond, what about that particular municipality or corporate bond makes it different? You know, it's hard to quantify that, and especially if you're only holding 10. You know, are you able to sufficiently shield yourself from something quirky, let's put it that way, with one of these municipalities or corporate bonds? So, and then what other risks? That's all of them. Those are the big ones. So the point, which is pretty clear, is that when we're talking about trying to find ways to earn money on our money and get our money back, individual bonds with the cost to get out of them, if you need to get out of them when you want to sell them, being as high as it is, and you know, it's ironic to me. The folks that want to go into individual bonds sometimes are doing it because they don't want to pay the cost of a mutual fund, which average mutual funds about 1.3 or so. If you look for, when we build portfolios at my company, we look for a portfolio having an average cost of about 0.6, 0.7%, somewhere in there. And so, you know, let's not grimace over even paying an advisor and paying for funds. When you're looking at buying some of these individual bonds, the freight to get in or get out when you buy them. So diversification, all of these risks that I described, except for interest rate risk, you can practically eliminate or minimize them with a bond mutual fund. Now, to address the last one, which the one I got out of the way up front, the interest rate risk, the way to do that is to not necessarily go out of bonds, because I'm not saying to do that, but if you're going to have money in bonds, we need to be in shorter term bonds to help to offset the deal with the potential rise in interest rates, because the longer the bond, the more it goes down when rates go up. And the other thing to look for is not just is to look for diversification of the types of bonds you have: government, corporate, municipal, and how long are they? We talked about that, but what about the credit quality? High quality? I don't want all high quality bonds. I want high quality, medium quality, and lower quality. I want a mix there as well. That'll help to boost the return potential. And the other thing, not just hug the coast of the United States. You can go with international. Now, I'm not going to say go jump into a bunch of Greek and Pakistan bonds. I'm saying diversified, look for international bonds from stable countries that they're going to pay the money back, okay? But you can get a mix. You can spread it around, but with all of that, stay shorter, okay? So that's a way to deal with those risks. All right, we're going to grab one more quick break, and we come back, a little bit about Social Security. Stay right there.
These are challenging times for investors. The stock market is volatile, with 10% drops a common historical occurrence. Is your portfolio prepared for such a correction? How about inflation? What's your plan for when a gallon of gas or gallon of milk costs $16? And what about interest rates? Did you know that a 10-year bond could drop 10% if interest rates rose just 1%? What's your plan for that? Holland Financial has answers to questions just like these and practical steps you can take to help mitigate these negative events. Call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com to schedule your one-on-one meeting with David Holland. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And welcome back. A little bit about Social Security before we wrap up the program today. This is interesting. I actually participated in this study. There was a study conducted by Financial Advisor Magazine, and they asked, let's see, how many of us did they ask? 1,800 advisors. So I'm one of those 1,800. But they sent an email out, and I responded to it. It was the 2014 retirement survey, and they asked financial advisors about Social Security, and basically the question was, what do you think is going to happen with it? So I weighed in. And I'll give you some of the findings of this study, which is very interesting. Now, this isn't what advisors think. This is not what the politicians think. This is not what Social Security thinks. This is just what us financial advisors who do this every day, what we think is likely to happen. So take that as what it is. And there are a million advisors in this country. So this is 1,800 of them. But it's interesting. The first question is, advisors were asked what would happen within the next 10 to 15 years if retirees can't survive on just Social Security and their savings. And a large percentage of the respondents said they felt that Social Security benefits would be increased for middle and lower income recipients and will be means tested for wealthy Americans. I think my answer was with that group, 35%. I definitely think they're going to means test at some point. If you make over a certain amount, they already tax you on your tax return for Social Security if you make over 25 as have an income over 25 as a single or 32,000 as a couple. They'll just lower that, or they'll it could be as high as 85% of your Social Security is taxable. They'll just make it go higher than 85%. It'll go to 100, and then it'll go to 150%, where they're actually taking it away. When you tax over 100%, you're putting 100% of the Social Security into the formula. They'll just make it higher so that the net effect is taking away benefits. So I definitely think that. Some thought that there'll be a modification where there'll be like an additional welfare or a low income credit. Some thought there would be other changes to the system. But it was interesting when I went through this, what some of the different advisors say. Lot of talk in the survey about what other folks may do. Some of the respondents said people may start looking at reverse mortgages more. Some are going to look at more at doing an annuity or other products that will provide income. So there's definitely a lot of kind of stirring or a rethinking of what retirement will look like over the next 10, 15, 20 years with the state of Social Security. Okay, that's your show. That's your new show format. Thank you for being with me.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.